deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Thursday. It's November 14th.
Wow, the 14th already?
14th. We're heading towards the holidays.
I can't wait. Counting down the days. So much food. So I'm like going to the gym like crazy now so that I could eat like...
So you'll be like extra thin before you hit the turkey.
Yes, I'll be like super. Yeah. Skinny.
Do you think
like
you can get any thinner
nuts.
Than you are now? I mean, is that possible?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think you look good. You look emaciated, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can. I mean, I'm not, you know, probably not going to, but yeah. Yeah,
that's, some girls go overboard, you know? You don't want to do that.
I know.
Guys don't really like very skinny women,
you know?
You know
what? You're right. They don't.
Yeah.
They really don't. Like,
yeah,
I have, like, old
have
pictures
something to grab,
from, like...
You know?
When I was, like, you know, like, modeling, you know, and I was, like, you know, a little bit younger. And, like, even before I, like, really grew into myself, as I grew up, like, it's inevitable. Like, I became a woman. I got curves. You know what I mean? Like, that's, like, it's, like, my bone structure, you know, like, where a lot of these, you know, pin-thin models, they just, I don't know if they wear, like, crazy belts around their hips when they're young so that their hips don't grow or...
Yeah,
but they're,
knows?
Like, one line, you know?
Exactly. They're, like, an ironing board or something,
yeah.
You know? They're flat, usually,
yeah.
And... So, you know, I mean, models, you know, can be attractive and stuff, but if they really go overboard, then they don't look good, you know?
Well, there's the difference, you know, between modeling and then there's, like, the, like, high fashion model.
Right.
And that's, you know, and basically it's, I don't know, I almost kind of feel bad for them because people never really look at them because anytime they're modeling, especially if it's for, like, runway mostly, it's for the clothes that they're wearing. You know what I mean? So people are looking at that, like, now, like, oh, wow, look at that beautiful model on the runway. They're, like, depicting the items that she's wearing.
Right.
You know, it's like she works so hard to get herself looking so hot. And but then it's really, it's none of it's for her.
So people just look at her as a clothes hanger or something.
Pretty much. It's kind of sad. You know?
Yeah,
but then
you
again,
know what? That's
they get
job,
paid,
you know?
Like, you know, stupid money to do so. So it's like, hey, if that, you know, that's your passion. That's what you want to do. More power to you.
And besides, let me break the news to you. I'm sure the guys check them out really well. You know, look beyond the clothes, I'm sure.
Yeah,
so,
especially
you know.
If they're like see-through. And
yeah, that's
naked,
why they take beautiful girls.
But, you know, that is true, that the normal guy really isn't into that.
Right.
You know, they want, you know, a little something,
right.
A little bit more.
So they're not into the clothes so much.
Womanliness,
you
know, like.
That's true. Guys are very simple. We're not complicated, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know that.
Yeah.
One thing I do know.
Yeah.
Guys can be very simple.
We're only one direction. We're not complicated.
One direction only. Isn't that a boy band? One Direction.
Yeah, the British one, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said that. It was kind of an inside joke.
Yeah.
If my friend was listening, he'd be laughing really hard.
Oh, yeah? Why is he into them?
One Direction and One Direction only. No, just saying that in that accent.
Yeah, because they're for teens, you know? They're not really for people past 20 years old, I don't think. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, something like that. I can't remember which boy band was on, you know, Andy Cohen show?
Mm-mm.
He's got, you know, he just has, like, you know, a couple, like, celebrities on a show, and he talks to them. They play games. It's on, I think it's on, like, the Bravo channel or something like that.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's kind of like a late night-ish talk show that goes on at, like, I don't know, I think it's, like, 11 o'clock maybe? I don't know. But he had one of those boy bands. I don't know if it was The Wanted or one, like something like that. And it was just kind of funny because he was like, he asked, somebody asked them a question. Like people can do like tweets right. and Twitter writes, and they'll be like, oh, so-and-so wants to know. And they said in, like, you know, the way gays view you, like, who's the most... like, who do the gays find the most attractive?
Right.
And it was just kind of funny. Cause they, I mean, I didn't watch the whole thing. They just showed a clip of it. And they were just, like, picking apart each one of the guys. And they singled out one of them and right. called him something. And now it's going to drive me nuts because I can't think of what the word was. But there was, like, a very specific word.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I looked it up in the Urban Dictionary, and it means blah, 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 blah. And it, like, fit him, like, exactly.
Really?
Like, if you look at him, it's like, oh, he is... that, you know, whatever that word was. I'll have to figure it out and get back to you on that. But yeah, it was just kind of funny. But
yeah.
it might have been One Direction. It might have been The Wanted. I get all those boy bands confused.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I never heard of The Wanted. Are they British too? Or are they?
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they're UK band.
Another British invasion. What do you know?
I know. Yeah, they're always. Yeah.
They always bring
boy bands.
There's yeah.
Because I remember when I was
not
in,
always. We had the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Well, Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. I mean, just like of this generation. Like
right.
they all seem to be from the UK. So there's
right.
another one, one of those singing shows. You know, they group you together, and they. I think the one that they made out of that was they were also from the UK.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what they were called, but yeah, I just remember thinking like, really, there's like. Five of them right now. They're huge. They're all from the UK.
Wow.
The
music there is very cool. And that's a nice thing when you live in Europe. You hear a lot of music we don't get here.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And some of the music is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
You
like when I was first hearing The Wanted was when I was there visiting for New Year's. And my little cousin, this was like a couple years ago, you know, my little cousin was like, oh, my gosh. She's like, look at this poster. She's like, isn't it amazing? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. What is it? It's a bunch of cute boys. She's like, no, it's The Wanted. Like, The Wanted. She's like, yeah, they're like the most popular band ever. And then, you know, kind of shortly after that, they became, like, super popular here.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, yeah, The Wanted. Oh, I know who they are.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah. I've been from the beginning.
I've
been listening to them since, you know, they're popular first in the UK.
Yeah.
Now they're cool here, but I know who they are. Whatever, losers.
I know. Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, bands come and go and stuff, but the good ones sort of last, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know,
we'll
like, Backstreet Boys, they still try to, like, come in with, like, a hit song and make
they
a comeback
do, yeah.
every now and then.
That's true.
I think that's pretty cute.
It is, you know. I mean, you miss, you know, once you're famous and then you're not, you miss those days, you know, because you get all the attention and everything. People like that.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. It's just got to be tough when you have such a, you know, large group of people all trying to do the same thing.
Right.
It's like there's always going to be, you know, feuds that start and, you know,
yeah.
people get upset at one another and then leave the band. And, you know, it's always just drama because there's so many people. I mean, it's got to be really tough for, you know,
yeah.
for group, you know, bands to stick together.
Yeah,
for
sure.
For as long
sure.
as they do, so.
Yeah, that's true. Well, our... before we get to our guest who's sitting here patiently, and I invited to the show because I know he's wanted to come on for a long time, and he's been on the show once on the phone a long time ago promoting his book. So now he's got a new book, and we're going to talk to him in the studio. I just wanted to bring up that right now, as we speak, Obama is talking and admitting that they screwed up with the Obamacare and stuff, with the rollout.
Yeah.
So now... So, you know, after the insurance companies went ahead and canceled people and stuff like that, now mm-hmm. he's telling them that people should have the opportunity to still keep their coverage for another year. So, you know, what that means is that everybody's screwed up now.
Wow. I mean, this is huge.
Screwed.
This
yeah.
is like...
It's admitting you're wrong, you know,
this is
for the president.
Yeah, but like for the president to be wrong, like that's huge. Like that's not,
yeah.
you know, you're the president. Like, no offense. I know nobody's perfect, but that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah. No,
this
that's
is
true.
Like an entire country that, you know, I mean, yeah. it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is a very big deal.
Like,
you know, that's
oops.
Why.
You know,
I know, especially when everybody, you know, some people got hopeful about it. Some people really hated it.
Yeah.
So now it's sort of like, I told you so type of a thing. But but we'll see. You know, I mean, it happens. I think Stanley will confirm this because I think you're into history and stuff. That usually second terms, the presidents have like all kinds of scandals and fiascos and things like that, you know. So
yeah,
maybe but we'll bring it up in a few minutes. We'll
you know,
see.
You know what is funny were the commercials for the anti-Obamacare.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever see any of those?
No.
Oh my gosh, I can't remember if I've talked about them before. I just thought they were so funny. So there's a girl that's like, you know, like in the gynecologist chair, you know, she's got like her legs up and the little stick things or whatever. And, you know, and then, you know, the nurse person's like, all right, you know, the doctor will be with you in just a minute. So they walk out and they, you know, she's like laying there. And then all of a sudden you see this huge like plastic like Uncle Sam head, you know, like that somebody just like put on their body, like peek up through like between her legs. And then she's like, who are you? You know, and then it said like, you know who your doctor is or something like that. And they had another guy, like another one with a guy that was getting like, you know, his, you know, private parts exam.
Yeah.
And you know, and then it's got like the classic, like, you know, the big Uncle Sam thing comes up and takes like the, you know, the glove on his hand and like smacks it, you know, like. And the dude's like, you know, and he's like, turn around, get on all fours or something with like
about to go up the anus.
Pretty much. And and then again it was like, no, your doctor. Big Uncle Sam head.
I know. This reminds me when I would go to my doctor and he does like a rectal exam. And I said, you know, I said, you went to school for probably 10, 12 years, so you'd be able to look up people's assholes and stick your finger in people's assholes. Is this what you went to school for?
What did he say? What do you say to that?
Well, he said there's a lot more.
I'm interested in an honest answer. But.
Well, you know, he says there's a lot more to medicine than that, you know. But, you know, I mean, my God, you know, it's like being a doctor is just gross, period, you know.
I know. And I can never do it. Like, I'm so squeamish. Like, if I see blood, I'm gone.
Yeah.
My face gets, like, white as a ghost, and I will, like, pass out. I'm such a baby. It's terrible.
I know.
I wish I wasn't, man. I really wish I was stronger than that, but...
Well, then just don't become a nurse, you know.
Yeah, no.
Don't get into any of that.
I don't think I will.
Oh, well. Well, let's bring in our guest who's sitting, I think, impatiently at this point. I mean, he looks pretty patient, but I would have been impatient by now. We have Stan Thornton in the studio. Welcome to the show, Stanley.
Hi, Sam. It's nice to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. And you were on the show how many years ago? Like 2 years ago, maybe?
2011, beginning of 2011. Yeah.
Really? Oh, so, yeah. He called in on the show. And he had sent me a book and stuff. Remind me what that book was about.
It was Christianity, Myths, and Legends. And what I do is I, in the book, I critique the stories that are in the Bible because, well, one, most of what we're told isn't really in the Bible exactly like it's they're telling us.
So you're saying it's people interpreting it for us.
So I show what the Bible says, and I go, look, this is what it says.
Right.
And then I go, now here's the problem with what it says.
Right.
And one of the easiest ones to realize is to look right at the beginning of Genesis, and it's like, it says on the first day God created the earth, and it says and he said, let there be light, and there was light.
Right.
And then he called, you know, the day light, the light day and the dark night.
Right.
Well, the problem is the sun wasn't created until the fourth day.
Right.
So you have to decide where did the light come from.
Right. The sun wasn't created before the earth?
No.
In the Bible? I thought it was, because I thought first he created the water and the sky, but who cares?
Yeah.
Okay, I trust that you're correct about that. Do you remember any of that, Mia?
I mean, yeah, I remember, you know, learning about all that, but, I mean, couldn't he have just done, like, the clapper, you know, the light? Like, well, I mean, maybe that's what it was. He had a clap light before the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's God. Who knows?
I always imagined this giant flashlight shining down on the earth, you know, and he'd turn it on and off for...
Yeah, but that's pretty much it. Well, you can argue that many ways. You can also say that for God, there is no day and night, you know. It's only day and night as far as Earth is concerned because of the way it rotates and stuff, you know. But that's the thing. I think they wrote it in terms that we can understand. I mean, remember that these things were written for pretty unsophisticated people at the time, you know. So, But yeah, there's a lot of inconsistencies, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, even there's like in Genesis, there's actually the two versions of creating man, and they're different. You know, it's like one, he created man on, I think, the third day or something, and then the other one, it was, you know, he told him you rule over the animals and all the stuff like that. And yeah, but that was before the animals were there. So, you know, who knows? But you found those inconsistencies in a lot of stories, you say.
Oh, yeah. It's the one that I thought was going to be an inconsistency until I researched it.
Right.
Is a story of Samson where he finds this lion and he kills it.
Right.
And he shows up like 3 days later and there's a beehive inside it.
Right.
And I'm going, no, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I went and researched. And yeah, if you go out into the Midwest, and that happens to like cows and stuff all the time.
Right.
So I'm going, well, then that could have happened easily.
Right. You know, the animal died and bees built a hive there? Is
hive
that what you're
saying? Inside the animal, yeah.
Wow.
I thought it was...
Yeah.
I never would have thought that was possible.
Yeah. So how...
Interesting.
Yeah. So I know I like talking about the Bible and stuff because it's such a deep book, you know.
It
there's
is,
so much
yeah.
to it, you know, and stuff. But my position at this point in my life is the Bible was written really for different times, different kinds of people that were not sophisticated, and they needed explanations as far as to why things happen, how things happen, and so forth. Because until then, they worshipped the sun, they worshipped, you know, stones, anything, you know.
Yeah.
People worshipped just about anything.
Yeah,
at
there was
point.
Like a god for every
yeah.
different thing.
Before there was like one god religions and things like that, right, Stanley?
Yeah, and well, the problem with ancient man is he was incapable of abstract thought.
Right.
So you couldn't just bring these things up and, oh, they understand.
Right.
You had to tell them a story.
Right.
It's just like Aesop's fables.
Right.
All of them were just stories, but they had a big moral at the end.
Right.
And after hearing the story, they're going, oh, I get it. You know,
right.
It's like that... V8 thing where you smack
yeah.
your head on your
yeah.
forehead and it's like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
I think so, yeah. So how did you become interested in this stuff?
Well, as a child, I went to church like everybody else.
Yeah, were you raised, what, Catholic?
I was raised Mormon.
Mormon, wow.
And so I went to church twice a week. I went Sunday for regular church and then primary, which was for kids to learn.
Wow, so you saw
Wednesdays.
A lot of worshiping and stuff.
And I started reading the Bible. I'm going, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And you go ask, and it's like you had two options. Because the Bible said so, or you have to have faith.
Right.
And that's not an answer.
Right, yeah.
And so I started looking for the answers.
Right, and that was at a young age, you say, huh?
Oh, yeah, I was like 13 when I stopped going.
Really? So you realize it's not for you anymore.
Yeah. Well, they kind of didn't want me around because I kept asking these questions.
Yeah, huh? You were rocking the boat a little bit.
There
just
was
a little,
always
yeah.
one in those classes.
Yeah, and I was him. Yeah.
I had to do all that with, you know, I took the classes and... You
did
know.
You? Was
I mean,
you...
I didn't go to a Catholic school,
uh-huh.
but I mean, I was raised Catholic, so I made my communion and confirmation and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. How did you feel about it? You kind of went along with it, right? Because your parents...
Yeah. It was like one of those things.
I know, it was like that too,
it was like,
you know?
Once a month, but I mean, it wasn't yeah. always all that bad because, you know, it was mostly kids from my class,
right.
from my age, because the majority of, you know, the kids I grew up with in my neighborhood, my area, everybody was Catholic.
Right.
So it was like basically just an extension of... You know, the kids you go to school with in your age, and it was like a class like once a month.
Right.
You know, and it was sometimes fun or whatever. Like, it was just, you know, just the experience of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but there was always, yeah, there yeah. was always that one that
yeah.
was like, well, what about this and what about that? Just always kind of trying to, like, test the teacher just
uh-huh.
to, you know, see how far they could take it.
That's
but,
true. So that's Stan.
So that
for
was
you.
Stan.
Yeah. So cool. And so you were, so I guess you grew up investigating this more and more, researching it yourself.
Yeah,
and
plus,
out.
A few years ago, I used to hang out in, we called them psychic chat rooms.
Uh-huh.
And we'd get what we called holier than thous. And they'd come in
right.
and go, oh, you're all going to hell because you're psychics and that's the devil.
Right.
And you go, well, what about your religion? You don't have any? Well, yeah, we have psychics, but That's different.
Right.
They're, you know, their gift is from God, and it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Everybody's the same.
Yeah.
So I used to throw the things that I knew out of the Bible at them because I knew they couldn't defend them.
Right.
And they'd run off because they didn't want to.
Yeah. Although many of them have an answer for everything, you know. It's, yeah. It seems like they have an answer. Like you said, you know, and the answer is always like, you got to have faith. It's just because, and it's God, and there's no answers, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and
know?
Then...
But I do think people have always needed something to believe in, you know, and an organized religion gives people the security and the comfort that they need, you know. But but I think a lot of those rituals, those ancient rituals, don't really belong anymore. You know, people can't relate to them. You can't connect to this stuff, you know. And not just in Christianity, in Judaism and everything else. You'll see a lot of people leaving the religion now, you know, because they're disillusioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was it like growing up in a Mormon home? Did you have siblings?
Yeah, I had a brother. And,
right.
You know, like all older brothers, he used to beat me up all the time. You know?
Did he really? He was older?
He got used to it, you know.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, it's just, that's his role.
Right. Now, did you have to, I mean, were you guys religious at home?
Not really.
Not religious. You didn't have to wear the magic underwear and all that stuff?
Oh, no. My great-grandfather.
The magic underwear.
Magic underwear?
You never heard of that before?
No, it's magic underwear.
Mormons wear it. You could tell her.
Yeah, well, it's my great-grandfather was big in the church, so he'd send us Christmas cards, and the whole thing would be covered with, you know, verses from the Bible.
Really?
And it's like, can't you just send a card saying Merry Christmas?
Yeah, that's good enough.
But, we weren't really that, you know, we weren't religious. Highly religious.
Right.
You know, I mean, we went, that's it.
Right.
It's not like today where you have the people that their whole life revolves around the church.
Right, that's true. And that's... I think there's still a lot of people like that, you know. I mean,
people
don't realize we're quite a religious country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we even have God we trust in our money, and
that is true.
Yeah, you know, and
even saying
also
in
the
school
Constitution.
We said the Pledge of Allegiance every day, and you know, that included
equal under God, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All nations under
God. Yeah, exactly. So the thing is that. It's part of every country, you know. I mean, the founding fathers somehow managed to separate these, at least in ideology and ideas, but I think they're very much mixed still in our society.
I do remember that being a bit of a controversy at one point, though, about the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
That they were saying, we need to take that out or do something about it, but I think they must have left it in, right? It's probably still the same.
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
it
at
is.
Least it was, you know, when I went to school, but
Yeah. Hmm. Now, Stanley, you're pretty conservative, right, politically and stuff. I mean, I can tell from Facebook.
Kind of, yeah. People freak out because they're going, what do you mean you were a lifelong Democrat?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, yeah, I was, but that doesn't make me a liberal.
Right.
You know, there's...
Yeah.
And so a lot of things I have... I guess I lean conservative on topics.
You don't approve of the president, the president's job, at least, right?
No, because he's trying it's like he wants us to be a European country.
You think?
But if, you know, if they want a European country, there's a whole bunch of European countries across the ocean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just
go live
in one.
Yeah.
You know, leave our country the way it is.
So you're saying like because of social health care and things like that, is that why you think he's making us more like Europe?
Well, they want us to be Europe. They've wanted us to be Europe since the 1930s.
Really?
When the progressives were running around. And you got to remember, before World War II started, the progressives thought Hitler and Mussolini were great leaders.
Really?
Well, they found out later on that they weren't so great. But
right.
originally, you know, in the 30s, they thought they were great.
Right.
And about the time Pearl Harbor happened, they're going, well, maybe there's something wrong here.
Right.
And, of course, later, after the war, we found out about, you know, the Holocaust and everything, and we found out just how bad Hitler was.
Right.
Yeah.
But they didn't see that in the beginning. They just saw how he reformed the, you know...
The country,
The country at the time, which was in shambles.
Right.
So, you know...
Yeah. I hear what you're saying, you know, but, I mean, this social health care is more like Europe, I admit. And I have to agree with that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, you get like different presidents, you know, they each take us in a different direction. And we've been very inconsistent. You know, I mean, you get someone like Bush and then you get someone like Obama and they pull in two different directions and this country doesn't know where the hell we're going, you know. And this guy says, I don't want war. And then he continues the war. And I don't know. I don't know. So
yeah.
It's pretty complicated, you know. But you're right about the fact that people don't know who their leaders are sometimes until it's too late, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you were telling me you grew up here in L.A., right?
Yeah.
What was it like? When, in the 60s, 70s?
Well, I was born in 54, so...
Oh, okay, so
you know,
50s, 60s.
We'd never lock our doors.
Right.
You didn't have to, nobody was going to break in or anything.
Right,
You went to school, you learned subjects.
Uh-huh.
There were no tests that you had to pass, so...
Really?
These days, all they do is they have a test, and that's uh-huh. all they study for the whole year.
Right.
Is that
uh-huh.
test.
Right.
And then they still fail it.
Uh-huh.
So there's something
mm-hmm.
wrong.
Right.
But, it's like watch reruns of Happy Days. That's pretty
yeah.
much what it was back
right.
then. You know, it was a lot like that.
Right. Very naive and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Innocent. That's true. That's true. Do you like movies about the 50s and 60s and stuff? Like, what are some of the movies? I mean, even... Back to the Future, if you remember that.
He oh, my
back
gosh,
to the
yeah,
50s,
I
remember?
Loved those.
Yeah. Those are fun movies, you know, because they do
back
seem
to
have had a more wholesome image. I don't know if
yeah.
it was, you know, because
oh,
I've
sure.
read it wasn't exactly like that for everybody, obviously,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was there were still family, I mean, TV families and stuff,
yeah.
you know, like Leave It to Beaver and all those. But, yeah, you know, I mean, it's things were not always like that. I mean, there was crime back then, just like there is now, and but it, yeah, it was a different time, definitely, you know. So you grew up, so you were like in your teens in the 60s, right? Like you were like the Vietnam Woodstock era type of a thing.
Yeah, my older brother served in Vietnam.
Oh, really?
What was weird for us is, I mean, that was. The Beatles era. I was
right.
10 when mm-hmm. the Beatles first showed up.
Right.
And
oh, wow.
I remember my friend and I went out in the backyard. He had a big patio in the back.
Right.
We set up a record player and sold Kool-Aid. And
really?
We invented disco.
Oh.
I mean,
yeah.
That's so cute.
So, yeah, we did those things. You know, we had
right.
lemonade stands.
Right.
You can't have them anymore.
No, huh?
Yeah, the government comes by and shuts you down.
Yeah, this is not FDA approved. This is not an official facility.
Take you away.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is true. You can't get away with stuff like that.
Yeah,
days.
I know. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of things like that started in the mid-20th century and stuff. And things have changed quite a bit, you know. So, Stanley, you wrote another book. And when did this book come out? When did you release this
one? It came out in April.
Yeah. Are you like? Do you do self-publishing? Is that how it
yeah,
works?
Yeah. This one. Well, my first one, I used a publisher.
Uh huh.
Cost me a whole lot of money.
Really?
I haven't made much back.
Right.
Of course, the topic explains why. But I'm going. I can do better than that.
Right.
So I created my business. I got a business license.
Uh-huh.
I found my book printers, so they uh-huh. print all the books for me. I don't have to worry about that.
No.
Wow.
And I distribute them. I mean, I'm everywhere: Barnes and Noble, Amazon. I'm in the UK, Australia. I mean.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
So what's the name of the book? What's the title?
It's called He Walks with Dragons.
Uh huh.
And the whole premise of the book is. Almost every civilization ever on the face of the earth has had legends of dragons.
Really?
Now, if it was just a few, like, say, when we know the Chinese dragons, and
right.
there's
Japanese You see, that's
dragons.
What I thought. It's usually, like, Asian, isn't it?
But there's also the European dragons.
Really?
In South America, they had the feathered serpent, and
uh-huh.
if you look at depictions of it, it's like the head of a dragon.
Really?
And in Africa... There's legends of dragons.
Wow.
I mean, they're just about everywhere.
So it's universal.
So it's like, well, then they must have existed. So I go, okay, how would they have related to man back then?
Right.
And so I created my the hierarchy of the dragons.
Right.
I developed their laws, which I made them real simple. And then I says, okay, now how did they relate to man? And so I have them interacting with ancient man,
right,
and basically guiding them from, right, but they do it from the shadows. So once they're gone, of course, the legends become gods.
Right.
And in fact, most of the dragons I have, their names, if you look them up, are gods. They're Celtic gods.
Oh,
because
okay,
that's the region I was working in, you know, Europe, Central Western Europe.
Right.
And it starts off, the hero of the story is Draeg. He's recruited at a young age to be a dragon rider. Mm. And he goes through all the training, and he learns the combat skills. He learns dragon magic. And then him and his dragon, they basically help preserve the natural order that's set up.
Right. So you're saying the dragons are like a race or something, right?
Yeah.
Where they have hierarchy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Do they talk?
Oh, yeah.
They communicate?
They talk. With Draeg's dragon, Draconis.
Right.
He calls him Draco because it's easier.
Right.
He has I call it a quirky sense of humor.
Right.
Where when you first hear him say something, it's like, that sounds weird. And then you think, oh, yeah, that's funny. And because you got dragons don't have emotions.
Oh,
or at least they claim they don't.
Right. Mm. And how did you find out about that? Just from reading about dragons and things like that? Did you do research, or is this based on fiction that you've read?
A lot of what I do on the dragons themselves is fiction. It's
right.
My concept of what dragons would have been.
I see. Okay.
But some of that's based on, historical.
Stories and legends,
yeah.
Right?
But unlike a lot of the stories, my dragons are not evil.
Right.
They don't go eating maidens.
Really?
I mean, to them it would be like, if you don't eat a maidens, why would I?
Yeah.
You know.
So you had to create like a whole fantasy world, huh?
Well, I use our Earth, so right. I'm using our history.
Right.
In fact, I have a lot of historical events, and I have some legends that take place in the
right.
book. And you can actually look those up and find out that like 90% of it's true.
Really?
The other 10% we don't know.
Right.
So it was easy to, you know, kind of write the dragons into it.
Right.
And go, well, see, we did that.
Right. That's pretty interesting, you know. I've never really been into fantasy books and stuff, but this sounds fascinating to me, you know, like The Hobbit and stuff, you know. Did you get into it at all and things like that? Are you into fantasy?
No, I mean, I haven't seen The Hobbit. I know they're coming out with another one
right.
pretty soon.
Yeah,
I saw the first Lord of the Rings movie.
Lord of the Rings, right.
And that was about it. But I mean, I liked it. Like I was really into like Harry Potter and
right.
all that stuff.
Yeah, which is fantasy too.
Yeah,
you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's new worlds that don't exist, things
yeah.
like that, you know. So, but this is cool. So now, did you write this for younger readers, or is that for all audiences?
Well,
how do you think?
I tried to figure out what age group, and from what I figured I knew at 14, I could have read this book. So
I
set it at 14.
Uh-huh.
But like I tell people, if you got a 10-year-old who can read this, just look at the preview and like Amazon or something.
Right.
And if you think your kid can read it, go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, I just put it at 14 because I know that I could read it and comprehend it at 14.
Right.
But kids are smarter than I was back then. So.
Right. But that's also the pretty much the average age, I think, when kids get into things like that, you know, like
yeah.
actually reading about dragons and fantasy mm-hmm. books and things like that, you know. So I think that's a pretty good choice. You know, I don't know how many adults would read about dragons.
Well, I've had, you know, 40, 50-year-olds
really?
Reading my book and going, hey, this is great.
Yeah, because I guess they grew up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they love it.
Wow. And plus, yeah, because it's here on Earth, you can relate to it.
That's true.
I figured if I put it on, like, Middle Earth,
right,
you know, how are people going to relate to it? Because, right, you know.
I know, and that's maybe why I'm not into fantasies, because I can't really relate to it. You know, it seems like somewhere out there. Though, that's not a bad thing. Some people love that.
You have to use your imagination,
exactly,
Sam.
Some people want to get away, you know.
Yeah.
People don't use their imaginations these days.
No, no.
It's like, they got computers. They don't need imagination.
Exactly. Let the person tell the story for me, you know, type of a thing. But, so this is cool. So the first book is Christianity, Myths, and what is that? I can't read it.
Myths and Legends.
Myths and Legends, that's right. And so this is a book. It was released in November 2010. And you guys can find that. It's a pretty cool book, actually. You sent me a copy, and I read. I didn't finish the whole thing, but I read some of it, and it's pretty interesting, you know.
Well, what gets me is in the last chapter, I take holidays that were based on pagan holidays,
right,
and they, like, absorb the holiday.
Right.
And the first one, of course, is Christmas, which is, they basically stole Saturnalia, uh-huh, because that was the big holiday in Rome at the time.
Really?
And they replaced Christianity, and they're going, no, you're celebrating Christianity. You're not celebrating Saturn.
Wow.
They're going, oh, okay. You know, it only took a few generations for it to kick in. So my book gets listed under Christmas.
Really?
So during Christmas time, I sell several copies because
good,
people notice it then.
Right.
Because there's a fairly short list of Christmas.
Right.
Where if you just go by, you know, normal religious books, mine's like number 6,432,412.
Right.
You know, you'd never see it.
Right.
Wow.
So it only shows up at this time of year.
Wow, that's funny.
In fact, I just sold a few copies recently.
Amazing.
So I'm going, oh, Christmas is here.
Yeah, good for you. So now, how long did that one take to write?
About a year, year and a half, because I had to research to make sure that when I said something,
right,
it was factual.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise
because
people are
going
to challenge you.
A lot of research going into a book like that.
Yeah, and you got to, you know, you first of course I'd take the Bible, and then I would go in and I'd research things like archaeology. Sometimes you'd have something that dealt with physics or chemistry, and you had to research that.
Wow.
Because obviously if people are going, oh, I can turn, you know, iron into gold, you had to find out whether it was actually physically possible.
Right.
Which I'm told it is.
Really?
But, you had to double check all those. And I had to make sure that I wasn't incorrect. You know, I wanted to, because if you're half right, people will go, you're wrong.
Right, exactly.
So I had to, you know, do that.
It's got to be researched. With fiction, it's a different
job. A little, it still took me about a year to write.
Uh-huh.
But, well, what I do is I start off with an outline.
Right.
I figure this one has, was it five chapters? So I'm looking at, I figured 8-10 pages for my outline.
Okay.
But as you're going along, all of a sudden you get, oh, that's an idea. And you write down 3 or 4 pages of dialogue.
Right.
That sounded really good at the time. And so my outline becomes, instead of 8-10 pages, is 30 or 40 pages.
Wow. Just for the outline.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
So the way you write is, you know how the whole story is going to unfold before you write it.
I knew the end of the story. When I started this one, I based it on a poem I wrote, which I've included at the back of the book. I have 4 poems at the back.
Okay.
One, because they had something to do with the book, and 2, because that way I got them copywritten for free.
Right.
Because they're included in the book.
Uh-huh.
And so I knew the ending.
Right.
It wasn't hard to come up with the beginning.
Right.
It was all the in-between.
Right. How you get from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, and this one, because it's first person, this is It's Drake's experiences in his own words.
Okay.
So it's like anybody else telling the story of their life.
Right.
They're going to tell you things that they thought were important. There's a whole lot they're going to leave out.
Right.
Well, Drake lives in the first book. He lives about 5,000 years.
Really?
And I explain in the book how he does it, so but I'm not going to give it away.
And I would get tired after about 100, you know.
And basically this takes it from when he's enlisted in the dragons up until dragons leave, because we know they're not here anymore, so they had to leave.
Okay.
So at the end of the book, they leave. And I explain how, why they left and how they left and everything. The second book in the series, which I'm about 70 pages shy of finishing, takes over for Drag from the time dragons leave. It continues his lifetime.
Wow.
So
I mean, this is cool, you know, because you're really getting into it. You're creating your own world there, and it's very creative, you know. So now, at what age did you actually start writing?
Well, in, was it first grade, I think it was?
Really?
The teacher showed us a picture, and she goes, write a story.
Uh-huh.
And you remember Little Rascals? The dog from Little Rascals had the black patch?
Yeah.
And it was white with the black patch?
Right.
Well, I wrote this little story about how this dog got a black eye. And the teacher loved it. Everybody's loved it that's seen it. I'm sure it's put away somewhere. And so that was my first experience.
Right.
When I was about 12, I started writing poetry.
Really?
Wow. And a lot of it's disappeared over the years.
Yeah.
But I managed to save some of them.
Right.
And I've written others, like at the back of the first book, I have, they're called dragon poems because they're about dragons.
Right.
And so, you know, it's still been a part of me. I even wrote a play one time that stunk.
Really?
I'm glad it never survived. But, you know, so I've had, you know, a kind of a love-hate relationship with writing all my life.
Right.
I just never became anybody.
Yeah, well, you know, it's never too late, man. So, I mean, so what do you do in your day job? I mean, or what did you do, I mean, while you write all this stuff?
Well, right now I'm disabled, so not able to work.
Right.
So
that's why you fill your time with the writing and stuff.
Yeah, this gives me, well, plus since I can't work.
Right.
I'm hoping that I can make this a living.
Right.
So that I'm not disabled no more. I'm a writer.
Right.
You know, and so I'm doing my best there.
Right.
And
is it hard to find a publisher these days?
I mean, well, there's millions of them now.
Right.
I mean, it's what you want out of it. I figure for my first book, I had to do all the marketing, and it's like, well, if I have to do all that work, why should I pay somebody else?
Exactly.
All I was doing is pay. In fact, this book, one of my book printers,
mm-hmm.
I'm told is the same book printer that my first publisher used.
Right.
So I did is cut them out.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't really
cut out the middleman.
Yeah. And you know, you do pay.
Right.
You know, it's like a book. You know, there's you paying the publisher.
Right.
And a lot of the publishers now, especially the they call them vanity publishers or pod publishers, they make their money off the author.
I see.
By selling them books.
Right.
It's not their, you know, the business structure for them to actually go out and sell your book to customers.
Right.
Oh, they make it available. I mean, my first book is available everywhere in the world.
Right.
I even sold one in South Africa.
Yeah.
Well,
but people have to know about it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You know?
And you don't get any promotion.
Yeah.
That's your job. You're supposed to promote yourself.
Right.
Well, I can do it just as well, and I did it for a lot cheaper because I didn't have all the middlemen in between.
Right. Unless you can get, like, a good publisher that can, you know, that can really get you out there and stuff.
There are traditional publishers that go out there and advertise. I mean, you've seen, you know, books advertised on TV.
Right.
The problem is you have to be established and well-known.
Right.
Because they know once they say, oh, this, you know, book is out, everyone's going to run out and buy it.
Right.
Or say, with the president or vice president or someone like that, they write a book, everybody buys it.
Right, because they're celebrities. I mean, people know them, you know, and that's the difference, obviously.
Yeah, it's, you know.
But when you're nobody, you have to really work hard at standing out.
And being me, being a noticed. Real nobody, it's made it really hard.
Yeah. But look, I mean, everybody starts as a nobody, you know. I mean, look at J.K. Rowling, who wrote, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, those were all unknowns, you know.
Yeah.
And E.L. James, you know, she was like, she also said she was pretty poor and unknown before Fifty Shades of Grey, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's
she wasn't even really an author before Fifty Shades of Grey. She just kind of started into something, and it's like this huge.
Yeah. So you gotta constantly promote what you're doing. You know, you gotta constantly be out there because there's just so much noise out there because of competition and everything. You know, it's not just in books, in everything too. You know, and I mean, even this radio station, you gotta keep reminding people that it's there and what you can offer and how they can benefit from it. So I see how you got your work cut out for you, you know? I mean,
well, that's why I got these T-shirts made up with my book cover on it.
Right.
Because I walk around with them, and they're going, you know, because everybody likes to look at people's T-shirts, and they're going, what's that? And it's like, it's my book.
Right. Yeah.
And I carry a few copies in my trunk, and every once in a while someone goes,
But I don't see you promote it on Facebook enough. You should promote the
Well, I have a website.
You have a website.
I have a Facebook page for my book.
Okay.
I have separate pages for each of my books.
Okay.
All you have to do is type in the title.
Okay.
And it'll show up.
Cool.
And
now you also have a website. Go ahead and give out that website.
That's StanleyThorntonBooks.com.
Okay. And you can find both books here, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And so the sequel to this one, you anticipate when will it come out? About 6 months,
I'm
maybe?
Shooting for the beginning of the year, but if I can make it by, say, April, which was when this one first came out, then I'm doing really good. That's year
true.
To the next one.
That's
so
true.
I'm trying. And like I say, I'm like 70 pages shy of being done.
Right.
And it's all filler because I have the main points already laid out.
I see.
So all I have to do is, you know, you got to get from point A to point B.
Right.
And it's so you got to stuff it with more, you know, I call them minor details.
I see. Okay.
Gotcha.
Like where you diverge a little bit from the plot and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of writers tend to do that. You know, sometimes they lose me if they get off track too much, you know. But, what else did I want to ask you? Oh, so, I mean, you're a creative type. You obviously, you will create. Doesn't matter if people are going to buy it or not. This is inside of you. It needs to get out.
Yeah. It's like I've got other ideas. I've already kind of written down minor little things on it. I used to, at one time I was a professional gambler, not a rich one, but you know, I made enough money,
really,
you know, to cover my expenses.
Right.
So I started a book on that, which I never finished yet, but I will eventually. I've got a children's book. I have an artist working on.
Nice.
Which,
and the illustrations and stuff.
Yeah, because I'm not an artist. I can't. I have trouble drawing a straight line. You know. And, you know, I've got another science fiction idea that I've been working on that has a kind of a twist at the end. Everyone thinks they know what's going on until the last chapter, and it's like, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I love stories like that. That's pretty cool.
And
it makes reading the whole book worthwhile, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because you get rewarded in the end.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Stanley Thornton, everybody go to StanleyThorntonBooks.com. And you can get Christianity, Myths, and Legends. And you can also get He Walks with Dragons. Yeah, you have the T-shirt right in front of me. But it's like I'm looking for it on the website, and I'm not focusing. So
just look under books.
Yeah, under books, and it's all listed here and stuff. And if you guys are into dragons, or if you have kids in the family into dragons, go ahead, get it for them. Could be a nice Christmas gift.
Like that
gift.
Movie, and How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
I loved that movie. It's a kids movie, but I'm like, IMAX 3D, going all out.
And I'd like to do a little commercial if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
This weekend, I'm going to be a vendor at Nuke the Fridge Con. It's a convention for a website that deals with the movie industry.
Oh.
And if people want to see what stars are coming, because there's a whole bunch of stars coming.
Right.
They can go to ntfcon.com.
Okay.
And that will take them to the webpage for the convention, and it'll show them where it's at. It's in City of Industry.
Okay.
Give them the address and everything, and the hours.
Cool.
And I'll be there all weekend.
And what are they showing there and stuff?
The website deals with the industry, the movie industry. They talk about the new movies coming out.
Right.
And whether or not an actor, a particular actor picked for a movie was the best pick or whether somebody else was. And
right.
So they have a lot in, you know, involved.
Right.
So once a year, they've been around for 5 years, so this is their fifth anniversary, and they're having the convention where there's a bunch of stars coming. There's like Angela Cartwright, Lost in Space, and Sound of Music. There's Billy Mummy from...
Isn't that Mummy? I thought it's Billy Mummy. I don't know.
I thought it was Mummy.
I think...
Maybe it is. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name.
We got to wrap up, though, but everybody go... What's that website again?
It's ntfcon.com.
Okay, ntfcon.com.
Yeah, and that'll show them where to go
And
how to get there, and there's like a... Going to be a whole bunch of stars coming in and out both days. So
sounds good. Okay, well, maybe we'll go. When is it?
Saturday and Sunday.
This Saturday and Sunday. Okay.
And Saturday is my birthday, so I'm like fluffy. I like chocolate cake.
Okay.
So they can bring me a little, you know, chocolate cake if they want.
Okay. Stan Thornton, everybody, if you want to get in touch with him on Facebook, I know he's there all the time, so that's cool. Thanks for joining us, Stan.
Yeah, thank you very much.
A lot of fun, and everybody check out his books. And that's it, Mia.
All righty.
Thank you, and
we'll see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.